From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
You can change the name, but you can't bring back the dead.
This weekend, the largest civil disobedience since the Vietnam War. More than 4,000 people crossed the line of the U.S. Army School of the Americas.
Anna, what are you doing here today?
Crossing the line.
And why are you crossing the line?
Because people are killing and we don't want them to do that.
All that and more coming up on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. This news from Decatur, Illinois. The Reverend Jesse Jackson is continuing his efforts to re-enroll six students expelled from school in Decatur for fighting. Jackson and the students' lawyers are headed to a court today. They'll ask a judge for an emergency order allowing the boys back into regular school. They'll also challenge the school board's expulsion policy. The boys have been expelled for 1 year, but they will be allowed to attend alternative school. Jackson says that's not good enough. He wants the boys reinstated in regular school in January. This news from Washington. The government reportedly is set to propose new workplace rules that would protect about 27 million Americans who pound on computer keyboards or work on assembly lines. The Washington Post reports the Occupational Safety and Health Administration will roll out new standards today requiring companies to tailor workspaces and equipment to the physical demands of each individual employee using them. Business groups have opposed any rule for years and have until now successfully lobbied Congress to block any action. OSHA says ergonomic injuries now account for nearly 650,000 lost days of work in the U.S. each year. This international news. Russian President Boris Yeltsin pressed forward today with his effort to persuade Parliament to ratify the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty, delegating the foreign defense and atomic energy ministers to take his case before lawmakers. In a letter to the Duma speaker, Yeltsin stressed that Russia had been a major force in drafting the treaty and that the agreement, quote, was a most important instrument for strengthening the nuclear nonproliferation system. The test ban treaty has been signed by 154 countries, but only about 30 have ratified it. The U.S. Senate voted last month to reject the treaty, saying it would undermine strategic stability. Russia has strongly criticized the move. Rwanda is refusing to allow the chief United Nations war crimes prosecutor into the country. It's already suspended relations with an international tribunal investigating the 1994 genocide of more than a half million people. That's because of the court's decision to release a leading suspect from jail on procedural grounds. The UN prosecutor says that without Rwanda's cooperation, the tribunal can no longer function. China's first successful test of a spacecraft for manned flight also had major military implications, proving China has mastered technology that could defeat U.S. anti-missile defenses, this according to an official Chinese newspaper today. The same low-power propulsion technology used to adjust a spacecraft's orbit and flight could also be used to alter the path of offensive missiles, helping them evade proposed U.S. anti-missile defense systems. More unmanned flights are expected before China launches a craft carrying astronauts, or taikonauts, as they're known in China, from the Chinese word for space. Western experts say China will probably send its first manned mission into space next year. The first lawsuit in what could be a torrent of litigation against Microsoft reportedly will be filed today. The New York Times reports lawyers are planning to file a class action suit in San Francisco on behalf of millions of Californians. They say Microsoft used its monopoly to overcharge buyers of Windows 95 and Windows 98. Experts say a ruling from a federal judge earlier this month puts the computer software giant in a vulnerable legal position. The judge concluded that Microsoft is a monopoly that has bullied its competitors. Nearly four dozen Hindus picketed outside a church in Boston Sunday to protest a Southern Baptist Convention prayer booklet that said Hindus have, quote, darkness in their hearts that no lamp can dispel. The booklet, released during the Hindu festival of Diwali, contains a number of other phrases considered offensive by Hindus. It has ignited similar protests in Houston and Atlanta. Similar guides have been distributed by the Southern Baptist Convention's International Mission Board, asking Baptists to pray for the conversion of Jews and Muslims. A Marine in Pennsylvania has filed a lawsuit asking to be let out of the military because of his mother. Private First Class James O'Neill says his mother might die if he isn't discharged. O'Neill says she suffered severe anxiety and panic attacks since he received his required anthrax vaccination in January. He says his mother has suffered from depression and lost 61 pounds. A family doctor confirms Martha O'Neill's condition is life-threatening. The anthrax vaccine is required for all active duty and reserve troops. The Pentagon insists it's safe, but a report from the General Accounting Office says no studies have been done on the vaccine's long-term effects.
Yo quisiera hacer un llamamiento de manera especial a los hombres del ejército y en concreto a las bases de la Guardia Nacional, de la policía, de los cuarteles. Hermanos, son de nuestro mismo pueblo. Matan a sus mismos hermanos campesinos.
The last speech of Archbishop Oscar Romero, the day before he was assassinated by graduates of the School of the Americas. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. Oscar Romero, the Archbishop of El Salvador, in 1980, executed by soldiers, many of whom were trained by the School of the Americas. And that was the subject of this weekend's protests, the largest mass civil disobedience since the Vietnam War. They came from across the United States and the Americas to participate in the largest act of civil disobedience. From a record crowd of 12,000 protesters, 4,400 people crossed the lines and risked arrest yesterday at the U.S. Army School at Fort Benning, Georgia, a place many call the School of the Assassins. Students, journalists, activists, members of religious communities, professionals, and others, both young and old, joined survivors of human rights abuses from across the Americas in the loudest call to date for the closing of the Army-run school. From high-level military officials in Augusto Pinochet's repressive regime in Chile to members of El Salvador's notorious death squads to Argentine generals responsible for tens of thousands of murders and disappearances to Guatemalan army officers accused of unspeakable atrocities. They do have one thing in common, and that is their training. Well, just a week ago was the 10th anniversary of the murder of six Jesuit priests, their housekeeper and her daughter in El Salvador, by School of the Americas graduates. To protest their killing and the ongoing operation of the School of the Americas, all 28 Jesuit colleges in this country were represented this weekend at the protest outside Fort Benning, Georgia. Schools like Georgetown in Washington, D.C., like both of the Loyolas around the country, Boston College in Massachusetts, all Jesuit colleges had representation at the protest. Protesters carried coffins and crosses bearing the names of victims of repression in Latin America, and some poured blood over themselves. I had a chance to go down this weekend to cover this protest, and today we will offer you various snapshots of the 2 days. The events began on Saturday morning with an all-day rally as thousands came from around the country and culminated yesterday afternoon as the more than 4,400 people cross the line onto the Fort Benning base. We're going to begin with one of the speeches at the start of the rally yesterday by journalist and activist Alan Nairn, who is well known for his coverage of Latin America and its connection to the U.S. military, was co-author of the article in the New Republic years ago called Bureaucracy of Death about the G2, the Guatemalan military intelligence, and in El Salvador in the Progressive magazine exposed the beginnings, the origins of the death squads there as being supported by the United States. Alan Nairn.
On Thursday in the New York Times, the Army, feeling the pressure of this impending demonstration announced that they were going to change the name of the School of the Americas. It reminded me of an experience I had a few weeks ago in Dili in occupied East Timor. At that time, the military command, the Indonesian Military Occupation Command, which was running the militias that were engaged in a campaign of rape, assassination, and arson, burning villages to the ground, dragging families from their homes and taking them away on Navy boats, then executing them and pitching their bodies over the side. That military command announced that they were going to change their name. And overnight, they became the Committee for the Restoration of Peace and Stability. You can change the name, but you can't bring back the dead. You can't bring back the victims of General Callejas of Guatemala, whose photo hangs on the wall, not the photos of the victims, the photo of General Callejas hangs on the wall of the Hall of Fame inside the School of the Americas. The general's claim to fame was his leadership of the GEDOS, the Guatemalan Military Intelligence Service, that has produced, whose interrogation process has produced so many bodies over the years that they found it necessary to build crematoria at their bases in Huehuetenango and elsewhere. It can't bring back the victims of General Gramajo of Guatemala. Gramajo is the man who coordinated the sweeps through the Mayan highlands of Guatemala's northwest in 82-83. They went village by village, and as the troops explained to me when I visited in the middle of the sweeps near a village called Acul, they would call all the people into the plaza. They would grab a few from the crowd at random. They would begin to strangle them and ask questions. Who here gives food to the rebels? Who is friends with the local priest? Who criticizes the army? And if they didn't produce a name, they would just squeeze harder. And as that person dropped, they would move on to the next. Then they would order the villages to dig a pit into which their neighbors would be thrown, and warn them that if they did not come to the good, if they did not begin supporting the army, they would return and burn the village. And then on the way out, they would slaughter the farm animals, give a few bursts of machine gun fire, and move on to the next town, 662 villages in all, by the army's own count. Gramajo later moved on to be Minister of Defense. It was there that his men abducted and gang-raped Sister Diana Ortiz, the American nun. And from there, of course, Gramajo moved on to Harvard, the Kennedy School of Government. On his graduation day, he was served with a lawsuit filed in U.S. federal court, brought by Sister Ortiz, brought by the loved ones who survived the Highland massacres. A U.S. federal judge in Boston, a Reagan appointee, later found Gramajo guilty by default of crimes against humanity. They said he had coordinated a campaign of terrorism against the people of Guatemala. And of course, weeks later, Gramajo was invited to Fort Benning, to the School of the Americas, to give the commencement address. You can't bring back the victims of the SOA alumni, but you can do something about those who are still alive. You can do something about those who are still alive on both ends of the M16. The exit end where the bullet comes out, that's the end that most of the world is looking up. And the trigger end, the end where the decision gets made, that's where we are. This is where the decisions get made. Washington is where the decisions get made. Here in the United States, people at the other end, in places like Guatemala, where they face the army with its Hados death squads, in Salvador, where they face the army with their death squads run by SOA graduates, the least of them being Major Daubuisson. In Haiti, where they face the FRAP terror squads that went into Cité Soleil and torched it and dragged Mrs. Alert Balance, the rice vendor and Aristide supporter, from the market and severed her hand and part of her ear with a machete, left her for dead in a garbage pit. In today's Colombia, where human rights advocates know that if they dare report on the latest carnage by the army and the paramilitaries, their office might be the next target of a raid by SOA-trained commandos. In Mexico, where for years the government used a policy that stood in stark contrast to that of Guatemala, Salvador, other countries of the region. In Guatemala, Salvador, in the 80s, everyone knew that if you stuck your head up, it got shot off. In Mexico, if you stuck your head up, they tried to buy you off. It was a more subtle system. They had a basic system of education and clean water and public health for the peasantry. They had some equity in land distribution. They had ejidos, communal lands. All that is gone. Mexico has moved in another direction. They've moved in the direction of NAFTA and GATT and the World Trade Organization and American agribusiness firms coming in to displace the production of the peasantry and American maquilas, undercutting American jobs and wages, hopping across the border to use the cheap, repressed labor of workers into whose bloodstreams they can pour unlimited amounts of toxins. And as Mexico has moved in that new direction in the past decade, they've made another move. For years, they were distant from the Pentagon. For years, they avoided the School of the Americas like a plague. But now, they are sending their people up here in buses and planes in massive numbers. Why? Because Mexico has embarked on a new policy of repression.
Alan Nairn speaking on Saturday at the School of the Americas protests, where more than 4,000 people crossed the line onto the U.S. Army base of Fort Benning, where the School of the Americas is housed. When we return, we're going to hear from victims of the School of the Americas, Adriana Portillo Barto of Guatemala, Rufina Amayo, survivor of the massacre at El Mazote in El Salvador. We'll also hear from Ramon Estevez. Well, you know him as Martin Sheen. It was his 60th involvement in civil disobedience, as he too was at the Fort Benning base. And we'll hear from the man who founded the movement, Father Roy Bourgeois, who has lived just outside the gates of Fort Benning for the last decade. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. Thank you. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!, the exception to the rulers. I've just returned from Fort Benning, Georgia. That's in Columbus, Georgia, where the U.S. Army School of the Americas is housed. This weekend, estimates of between 3,100, says the Army base, and more than 4,400, says the School of the Americas Watch, the organization that has been protesting the School of the Americas for the last 9 years. Between 3,100 and 4,400 people crossed the line on Sunday. It was the largest act of civil disobedience since the Vietnam War, as they called for the closing of the school. In this segment, we'll hear from victims of graduates of the School of the Americas, beginning with Adriana Portillo Barto. She lost a number of family members, including her father and two daughters, who were disappeared by the Guatemalan military. She spoke yesterday, just before people walked onto the base.
My name is Adriana Portillo Barto, and I am a survivor of the School of the Americas.
Can you explain in what way you're a survivor?
Yes. In 1981, several members of my family were kidnapped and disappeared by people who were following orders from people who were trained at the School of the Americas.
Who in your family?
My father, my stepmother, my sister-in-law, my 18-month-old little sister, and my two daughters, who were 10 and 9.
Why were they taken? Where were they taken from?
My entire family was involved in the movement for social change in Guatemala. And the whole family was taken from my father's home in the capital city by a large group of police officers, army officers, and soldiers, and secret police.
Where were you?
I used to live in a town about 3 hours from the capital city, and my father had been visiting me, and when he came back to the capital city, he brought my daughters with him, because that weekend we were going to celebrate the birthday of one of our nephews. And when I got to the house to celebrate, you know, his birthday, all I found was a large group of Guatemalan security forces at my father's house.
What did you do after that? What did you do after that?
I went back to my hometown, gathered my two surviving daughters with my husband, and went to the capital city trying to get lost in the city. We lived in the city for 3 years without ever saying a word about what happened, because we were afraid that our two surviving daughters were also going to be taken and disappeared.
And then what happened?
And then during the 3 years we were there in Guatemala, we were subjected to terrible intimidation. Dead bodies were being thrown in front of our house. My ex-husband, the father of my daughters, was one night taken by a group of men in plain clothes when he was coming home from work, and taken to the edge of a ravine where he was made believe that he was going to be executed. He was robbed of his possessions and then taken back to our doorstep. One night, a large group of men in plain clothes came to our house looking for a Nicaraguan woman who, according to them, we were hiding in the house. It was not true. But before they left, they said that the next time they came to our house, they were going to kill us. A few days, just with the clothes on our backs and a small plastic bag with underwear for my two surviving daughters and some pictures of my family, we left Guatemala.
How do you know that the people who took your children and your family were under orders of those trained by the School of the Americas?
It's easy to know because, and I actually learned about these things through the School of the Americas Watch. they have the lists, and also the School of the Americas website has the listing of all the officers, Guatemalan officers and soldiers and government officials that have been trained at the School of the Americas. And these people all held either public office or, you know, were known to be in charge of, like, the Army Intelligence Office in Guatemala. So that's how we know.
So how does it feel for you to be here today, standing in front of the U.S. Army School of the Americas with thousands of protesters?
It's very difficult in one way, because I am really overcome with emotion and with pain, just to know that here, the people who are responsible for the disappearance of my family, but particularly of my two daughters, were trained here. It's painful because the leaders of the School of the Americas refuse to acknowledge that they have played a devastating role in what happened in Latin America. At the same time, it's a wonderful thing to be here, because nowhere have I experienced solidarity like I have experienced in this place.
Will you be crossing the line?
No, I won't be crossing the line. I wanted to, but I won't be able to, because tomorrow I'm leaving for Guatemala. And I don't want to lose my plane. I don't want to miss my plane today and my plane for Guatemala tomorrow.
Well, thank you very much. Where do you live in the United States now?
In Chicago.
Thank you.
And that was Adriana Portillo Borto, who is a survivor of the Army School of the Americas graduates. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! As we go now to neighboring El Salvador, to another survivor. A song, in fact, was written about her and what happened in El Mazote.
What shall we do with the school of torture once in Panama and now in Georgia? What shall we do with the school of torture early in the morning? Close it up no more to open, close it up no more to open, close it up no more to open early in the morning. And it's hauling away and up, we rise, hauling away and up, we rise, hauling away and up, we rise, a new day is dawning.
You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, and we're just outside the U.S. Army School of the Americas, where a day-long rally is taking place. Rufina Amaya is one of the people who spoke. She's a survivor of the El Mazote massacre in El Salvador. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Mi nombre es Rufina, y vivo en El Salvador.
My name is Rufina, and I live in El Salvador.
Y estoy acá por la solidaridad, he sido invitada acá, por la solidaridad de este país.
And I've been invited by the solidarity movement of this country to be present here today.
Y me hace reflexionar porque Dios hizo ese milagro de que yo quedara para decir, para testimoniar la verdad de la masacre del Mazote.
And it makes me wonder how God saved me so that I could give my testimony, so that I could be present and tell people what happened.
El masacre del Mazote fue en 1981.
The massacre del Mazote was in 1981.
11 de diciembre.
On the 11th of December.
Donde fue torturada, masacrada toda esa población.
Where the people were tortured and massacred, the entire population.
Niños y mujeres, embarazadas, ancianos, todo fue matado por grupos.
Children, women, old people, all of us were killed, the men too, all in different groups.
Y estoy acá para confirmar la verdad que dicen las revistas, los libros. Ahí está la historia.
I'm here to confirm the truth about what's written in the magazines and in books about the story, that it's true.
Para que las personas que lo leen crean que sí es cierto, y estoy viviendo todavía, por gracia a Dios.
So that people will believe it and know that it's true and that I am still living, thanks be to God.
Por eso estoy testimoniando esto acá.
That's why I'm giving my testimony here.
How did you survive?
Yo pude sobrevivir, como decimos, por milagros de Dios, cuando me llevaron a la fila, que me quitaron mis niños de mis brazos, me los arrancaron de mis brazos y me los tiraron para allá.
I survived by a miracle, as I tell you. It was God's will that I live. I was in a line of women, and they took the children, they tore the children from my arms and took them away from me.
Me quedé por estar peleando por mis hijos, que no los quería dar, no los quería aflojar. Me quedé de último de la fila de las mujeres que llevaban a matar donde estaban matando.
Because I didn't want to let go of my children because I was struggling to keep them, I ended up being the last person in that line of women.
Y al llegar a la fila yo quedé, me arrodillé a la tierra, pedíle a Dios que me perdonara o que me salvara, y que eso pues iba a ser oración. Haciendo oración me metí debajo de un arbolito.
And as the last person in the line, I knelt down and I prayed and I asked God to save me. And I just, while I was praying, I was able to creep off into some bushes without being noticed.
En medio de ese árbol que le dicen manzano, allí me quedé yo, casi en los pies de los militares.
I stayed right there underneath the tree, which is known as an apple tree, and I was almost at the feet of the soldiers who were doing the killing.
Pero yo creo que fue una obra de Dios que no me vieron.
That's why I say it was a work of God that I was not seen.
Así pude permanecer allí hasta como a las 1 de la mañana, cuando ya estaban matando mis hijos, los niños y todo eso. Yo me preocupé tanto que yo no hallaba cómo salirme de ahí, y tomé decisión porque como le pusieron fuego a la casa donde estaban los muertos.
And I stayed there until about 1 a.m. in the morning. I heard them killing everyone. I heard them killing my children, and I was very affected. I didn't know what to do. I felt like I was never going to get out of there alive.
Who were these soldiers?
Eran los soldados eran los salvadoreños y los batallones que habían entrenado aquí en los Estados Unidos.
It was Salvadoran soldiers, and the battalion had been trained here in the United States.
Why did they move in on El Mazote?
Bueno, no sabemos el porqué, pero fue un lugar que fueron 5 caseríos que destruyeron ahí.
We don't know why, but we know that there were 5 very small hamlets that were completely destroyed that day.
En ese momento nosotros no entendíamos el porqué estaban asesinando a la gente.
At that time we did not understand why they were assassinating and killing people.
Nosotros no estábamos enterados de nada, como dije yo, no teníamos medios de comunicación, no teníamos nada de información. Y entonces nosotros aguantamos ahí, o sea, estuvimos allí porque no teníamos ningún delito.
We were there because we didn't have any media, we didn't have any access to media, we didn't know what was going on. If we were there, it was because we didn't know what was going on. It wasn't because we had committed any crime.
Allí había estado el ejército, y allí una semana después que se salió de allí fue a masacrar a la gente.
The army had been there a week earlier and they came back and it just massacred everyone.
Por eso decimos que fue por meter terror al pueblo, ¿verdad? Para decir, matando, nadie va a hablar, ni nadie va a decir.
That's why we think maybe it was in order to get people to feel the terror of the war, because they thought if we kill everyone there, that's going to make a big impression.
Porque esto se cayó casi 10 años después de, fue el 1981, y nosotros regresamos al país el año 1990, y entonces esto no se había dicho nada en El Salvador ni en ninguna parte del mundo, solamente al nivel internacional en algunas partes, ¿verdad?
This news had never been transmitted. What happened at El Mazote had never been transmitted on a national level. It had only been transmitted internationally because we had left the country after it happened. And so when we repatriated to the country almost 10 years later in 1990, that's when it became public in El Salvador.
Mm-hmm. You were saying it was till 1 o'clock in the morning that you were hiding.
Estaba diciendo que hasta la 1 de la mañana estaba escondido.
Hasta allí estuve escondida y después me salí a un río. Bueno, me agarré un manzanal y me fui gateando. No me podía ir parada porque estaba llena de militares.
Yes, I was there until one, and then I grabbed a branch of the tree that I was hiding in, and I put it over myself, and I went, I crawled out because I couldn't walk because the military would have seen me.
Porque en el momento allí lo que me hizo salirme de ahí eran los gritos de mis hijos que me gritaban que los estaban matando.
What I heard, what made me leave was because I heard the cries of my children. They were shouting out to me, telling me that the army was killing them.
Y en medio llegaron unos animales, unos terneros, unos perros, y eso me, por medio de eso me pasé yo de la calle al otro lado.
And just then some animals came along. There were dogs and there were small cows, calves, and they were going down the road, and so I put myself in between them and I crawled.
Pero más abajo me hicieron una balacera y yo entonces yo me rodé y me quedé en una ladera, y estando allí permanecí hasta el siguiente día.
And later on, when I was down at the bottom of the hill, they must have seen me, and they shot some shots at me, and then I just remained very still in a small ravine, and I stayed there until the next day without moving.
Siguiente día, como por las siete de la noche, me fui rompiendo un maguey con la cabeza y a salir abajo a una finca.
And the next day, after I had been hiding all night, I started at 7 p.m. I started crawling through a maguey field, which is very spiny, and I used my head to break through the maguey until I got to another place that was safer.
Yo salí sin ropa, sin nada, solamente espinas en mi cuerpo porque era un gran magueyal que tiene espinas bastante.
Maguey has a lot of spines on it, so by the time I got through the field, I didn't hardly have any clothes on. I didn't have anything left. I was bleeding, and I had spines over in every part of my body.
Pero así pude sobrevivir, que estuve como 4 días aterradas con hojas secas para que no me hallara el ejército.
Then after that I had to remain for 4 days under dry leaves so that the army would not find me, but I did survive.
How many people died? ¿Y cuánta gente murió?
Pues fueron como 900 personas que murieron ahí.
Approximately 900 people died there.
And where are they buried?
¿Y dónde están sepultados?
Está la mayoría está regada porque lo mataban por grupos por todos lados, pero en todos los países, como son 5 caseríos los que masacraron, están regados. Pero hay una parte que están las tumbas en el mero mozote.
Most of the people are scattered. Their bones are scattered and they were just left on top of the ground. They were not buried. But there are some places where people are buried and those are in El Mozote. After the exhumation took place, some of the bones were buried.
Porque se logró hacer una excavación y sacamos 137 cadáveres de un solo lugar.
We were able to carry out an exhumation and 137 bodies were exhumed from one single site.
La mayoría eran niños, solo eran 7 adultos.
The majority of them were children, there were only 7 adults.
Y por eso estamos claros que los niños todos murieron ahí.
That's why we're very clear that all of the children died there.
Well, Rufina Maya, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
And that was Rufina Amaya, the survivor of the El Mozote massacre. Before we go to break, this is a song about her and the massacre that was conducted by the Salvadoran Army's Atlacatl Battalion, trained by the School of the Americas.
Centuries of tears form the way. Cradle to grave, blood upon blood in the hills leaves a trace, can't be erased. For in El Mozote, Mozote, oh, the shame. Children fell, she lived to tell the only
She witnessed it all. It must be told.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! El Mizote by Colleen Cato from the CD Sing It Down, Songs to Close the School of the Americas. When we come back from our break, we'll hear from a spokesperson from the SOA, and we'll hear from Martin Sheen, who committed civil disobedience yesterday, as well as the father of the movement, Roy Bourgeois. Stay with us. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. As we continue with the largest civil disobedience since the Vietnam War, more than 4,400 people yesterday crossed the line of the Fort Benning base where the U.S. Army School of the Americas is housed, just before they walked over that line yesterday afternoon. I got a chance to speak with the spokesperson of the School of the Americas, Rich McDowell.
Your comment today on this protest?
Well, my only regret is that the people who are here are uninformed. And if they were informed, I think there wouldn't be so many people here. It's unfortunate that they always hear one side of what's going on. They never invite anybody from the School of Americas to these rallies that they have with students and things like that. And if they were, if they did do that, then hopefully they would be able to make a better informed decision.
What does the school do?
The school trains soldiers, policemen, and all sorts of different things. They train them in the same things that the Army, United States Army, trains its soldiers in. And, you know, that can be anywhere from demining to first aid to helicopter maintenance. It's the entire gamut.
What about the charges that there are many graduates of the School of the Americas, like Noriega, like Roberto d'Aubuisson of El Salvador, like the people who were responsible for the killing of the Jesuits, that are graduates of the School of the Americas that go back and kill and maim and torture?
Well, you know, if you really look at it, first of all, most of the people that you're citing trained at the School of Americas before it moved to Fort Benning, number one. Number two, you say many, and, you know, really, you get down to it, out of 60,000, 300 have actually been mentioned, but of those 300, 20 have been tried and convicted. So, you know, it's not many people. And then you also have to look at, you know, what courses did they attend when they were attending the School of Americas? Noriega was here for 2 weeks, so not here, but the School of Americas when it was down in Panama, so, you know. Are you going to hold the School of Americas responsible for what he ended up becoming because of a two-week course he attended?
Another example is General Gromajo, the former defense minister of Guatemala. He was slapped with a lawsuit when he graduated from the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, charging him with gross crimes against humanity. It was after that time, after he fled the United States because he didn't want to deal with that lawsuit, that he was invited here to speak to a graduating class. He himself had boasted about wiping out some between 300 and 600 villages in the northwestern highlands of Guatemala.
Yeah, I don't have any information about that. You'd really have to talk to someone from the School of Americas and see what they, you know, again, that's something I'm unaware of.
I was reading an article in the local paper, an interview with the commandant here of the School of the Americas, and he said that we're training soldiers about democracy. The issue that's raised by the protesters here is then why don't they go, for example, to the University of Georgia or to any civilian school in the United States? Why bring them to a military site?
Well, that's not the only thing that we're training them in, you know, democracy, but you know, let's face it, if we didn't have them training here, then they're going to look for another army that will train them. And, you know, would you rather have them training in the United States of America, where we do teach human rights, where we do teach democratically and civilian-controlled military, or would you rather have the North Koreans come over and start teaching them?
What about the School of the Americas manuals that Congress members like Joe Kennedy got their hands on that talked about neutralizing people, that talked about torture, etc.?
Now, first of all, you're misquoting the manuals. Second of all, they were manuals that were not written by the School of Americas. And third of all, once we discovered these errors in translation, we confiscated them all and destroyed them. And you're talking, you know, a very few lines out of several manuals.
But those lines were the very few lines you're talking about.
They were not as dramatic as you would make them sound. But they could have been misinterpreted to support things like torture, but they weren't. You know, it's not something that was taught at the school.
But they were put out by the School of the Americas?
No, they weren't. That's what I'm saying. They were not. We had them. It was one of those days when we were in a rush to get manuals for them. We went to another United States Army school. We got those manuals, had them translated. When the errors were found, the School of Americas immediately pulled them.
Has the protests over the years had an impact on the curriculum and on the school?
I don't think the protest itself has. I think what has had the impact is we have what we call a board of governors, and they're distinguished people. They're ambassadors and retired generals and things like this, and they're very well read. They're very well traveled, and they come back to us and they say, "Listen, you know, to be more current, to be able to do more good for the people in these Latin American countries, here's some of the things that you need to do," and we're always looking for ways of change.
And that was Rich McDowell. Rich McDowell is spokesperson for the School
people
of the Americas.
Think families coming
I
out,
had
basically.
The chance to speak with Father Roy Bourgeois, who was standing after more than 4,400 people crossed the line at the Fort Benning base, watching everyone go by. And I asked him about some of Rich McDowell, the SOA spokesperson's comments.
I was speaking to a spokesperson for the School of the Americas, and he said, unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation that's put out there. For example, the number of people responsible for human rights abuses that are trained there, he said it's something like 200 of them have been arrested, and that's a small number that have been trained at the School of the Americas.
Well, let me say, we have documented over 600, and they have never come after us and said, you know, this is not accurate. In fact, they use what we have come out with and put on our webpage. We have over 600 of these graduates from the School of the Americas who have been involved and participated in crimes against humanity, like the massacre of the Jesuits and the two women, the rape and murder of the church women, El Masote, over 800 killed, Archbishop Oscar Romero gunned down at the altar, and many more, of course. The most of the victims are the poor. But yes, he is correct in that only a handful have been prosecuted. But that's the power of the military in Latin America, especially in Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras, and other countries. They are so powerful. They can torture. They can rape. They can participate in these massacres and crimes against humanity and get away with it.
I also asked him about the torture manuals, and he said that they weren't the School of the Americas. They had borrowed them from another U.S. Army school, and that as soon as they realized those unfortunate lines were in it that had to do with issues like neutralization, they think it was in the translation, but they still confiscated them.
It's called damage control. Shame on them. You know, it's really offensive. Rather than owning up to what they have done, rather than apologizing to the families of so many of their victims, they try and simply say that these manuals, yes, they were the passages that were used and that we've withdrawn the manuals, like they're withdrawing faulty GM trucks. No, they should own up to what they have done. They have never, ever apologized to the families of the thousands thousands who have been killed by graduates of this school. Rather than apologizing and asking forgiveness, they have tried to do damage control. And I must say, it is so offensive.
Are you concerned that if they were to close the school because you have made it such a visible symbol, that they would train as many officers, they would just disperse them around to different army bases?
If they, take this school and relocate it as is to another army base, we are going there. Wherever it goes, we go. The thousands will follow. And every year, the numbers will increase. If they separate, try to sort of divide the movement or kill the movement by sending, these soldiers to many different bases, we have enough people in this movement, thousands all over this country. We will congregate wherever these soldiers, the men with the guns from Latin America, go. They're bullies. They're thugs. They should not be in the United States.
And that is Father Roy Bourgeois, father of the movement that is founded, some 9 years ago, just after the killing of the 6 Jesuit priests, their housekeeper and her daughter. 19 of the 20-some-odd soldiers responsible for their deaths trained at the School of the Americas. And now we turn to one of the first people to be taken by the military as he crossed the line, and that was actor Martin Sheen, whose real name is Ramon Estevez, and I asked him if that had particular resonance for him yesterday, his birth name.
Well, it does in a real sense, because I never changed my name officially. I am still Ramon Gerard Estevez, or Estevez as my dad pronounced. Look at all those cards, but that's it there. It's still my official name. I never changed it. I never will. I love this name. I'm only regretful that it's not the name of the acting president right now, but you never know. But yeah, that name has always connected me to the Hispanic community, always made me feel very proud. I always feel like I kind of let up too early in the game, by changing it to a stage name. Sheen, I don't respond to it in that personal way. It's like I invented that guy and he goes out and does those things. It's like, well, that's what I do for a living, but this is what I do to stay alive, So, yeah, the name is very significant, and I do love it, and I shall never change it.
So what are your feelings today with these thousands of people here?
Did you say feelings or failings?
Your feelings.
I was going to say my feelings. If you heard me speak, you saw my feelings. They won't listen to me. But my feelings is very, very gratifying to see so many people. There's been some talk here. Did y'all hear this? That this is the largest demonstration since Vietnam.
The largest
civil disobedience since Vietnam. What an extraordinary thing. And there's that sense here of community, of oneness of purpose, of a real understanding. Most people in the country not only have never heard of the School of the Americas, they don't have any idea where it is or what it does or purports to do until we put a name on it here. Until Roy Bourgeois has called our attention to it and raised our consciousness about it and called us here to name the victims who have suffered so by our policy enacted through the School of the Americas. And I'm being a windbag again, as usual, and I apologize for that. But I think that the greatest gift we can give this day is to make people in our country, our fellow Americans, who are so lethargic in our booming economy, so-called, so heedless of the cries of the suffering in the third world, right at our back door, right in this hemisphere, suffering that we are directly responsible for. And so that's what's so gratifying, is that we will put a name on the School of the Americas. They can no longer do this in darkness, in secret, in silence. We've named it.
Will there be any episode of the West Wing on the School of the Americas?
Oh, would that there were. More likely, there'll be impeachment hearings. I couldn't think of a better thing to be thrown out of office for. I know what they'll say, too, as I clean out my desk and head out into the Rose Garden. Let that be a lesson to you.
So you're going to cross the line today?
Well, I never say. I don't know. I hope I will have the courage. I pray that the Holy Spirit will keep pushing me towards freedom and that I will be a willing participant in that effort. But I leave it up to the Spirit. I really don't know. I'm such a big sissy, a big coward. I have to wait to see what's going down in front of me and see where I'll fall in, I pray God that I'll have the courage to do what my conscience is asking me to do and to do what has brought me here. We'll see.
The commandant here says, he was quoted in the local paper saying, this is about a school that trains people for democracy, and this is discrimination against people from Latin American soldiers, from Latin American countries.
The commandant should get a better PR agent, really. If you want to train people in democracy, there's a very good school of constitutional law at the University of Georgia. I think they'd do a much, much better job in that regard. This is about militarism. This is about training people to oppress other people. And as long as it's done away from our eyes, American people cannot have a voice in it. The people that you see here today that have come here to place their energies, their names, their conscience, their spirit here are aware of a whole lot, a whole different school of the Americas. There's something going on here that we must accept the responsibility for. It can no longer be done in our name. Nunca más, nomada. Nada, no más. And to be a part of this is to be aware of the truth of what the School of the Americas is doing. I've been in Central America several times. Many of my colleagues that are here this day have been there. Roy Bourgeois, of course, was there for many years, serving as a priest, serving the poorest of the poor. And if he doesn't speak with more authority about what's going on in Central America vis-a-vis the School of the Americas and the commandant here, then I'm not the acting president of the United States.
And that was the acting president of the United States. He plays the president of the United States in the West Wing on NBC. He is Martin Sheen, or Ramon Estevez, one of the first to be taken by the military on the base as he crossed the line with more than 4,400 others.
Widener was interviewed just like you in the local paper. Anna, what are you doing here today?
Crossing the line.
And why are you crossing the line?
Because people are killing and we don't want them to do that.
Anybody else coming through?
You're coming through. Walk on around. Come on up forward. Come on forward.
Anybody else coming through? Come on. Child tortured at age 10.
More than 12,000 people protested at the School of the Americas this weekend. More than 4,000 crossed the line onto the School of the Americas. And that does it for today's program. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion and David Love. If you'd like to get a copy of today's program, you can call 1-800-735-0230. That's 1-800-735-0230. You can write to us at democracy@pacifica.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for listening to another edition of Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! As we go out with the song El Mazote on the CD Sing It Down, Songs to Close the School of the Americas. And the website for the School of the Americas Watch, the organization that led the protest, is www.soaw.org.
Oh, the shame came to pass once again.